and welcome back to the Rock Chalk Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Mitz. Tonight, I'm joined by our basketball editor over at Rock Chalk Talk, Steve Fetch. Fetch, how are you doing tonight?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. So I'm getting ready to go on vacation here, and we had this Jalen Wilson news drop today, kind of combined with the Isaiah Moss news from just a couple days ago. You know, I figured I couldn't wait until I got back in like 3-4 weeks to go ahead and talk about this. So I wanted to get you on tonight. I actually had originally scheduled to have Scott Chasen on the podcast tonight and have like a longer episode kind of talking about some of the stuff we've said we were going to talk with him. But unfortunately, that kind of fell through. And I definitely wanted to talk with somebody about this. So, of course, who else but Fetch? So, obviously, big news that's happened recently. Isaiah Moss, the grad transfer from Iowa, committing to the Jayhawks. I don't remember if it was yesterday or if it was today, or the day before. But then today being Wednesday, news just recently, Jalen Wilson picked Kansas over North Carolina or Michigan to decide to come to the Jayhawks. So obviously big news, getting two guys that supposedly are really good from the perimeter. Fetch, what were your initial reactions to this?
Well, I think, my initial reaction is this coupled with the other news that they've had really takes them from a team that's going to contend for the Big 12 title to a team that is going to contend for the national title. I saw that, I think it was Jeff Goodman bumped him up to number one in his preseason ratings. So, you know, that's always nice to see. Obviously, the title isn't won now, but, you know, you'd rather be up here than 21 at the start of the season. So I think it's just, you know, they get to fill in really their biggest weakness with, Isaiah Moss, who has 300 plus attempts in college to show that he's a good enough shooter to provide the outside shooting that Kansas needs. And then from what it sounds like, obviously I'm, you know, ad nauseum say this over and over and over again. I'm not a huge recruiting guy, but it sounds like Jalen Wilson's a pretty darn good shooter. So you get to add two shooters to a lineup that really, you know, had everything else in it. And, you know, it's really looking like Kansas is building maybe the best team in the country right now, which is something that if you had told me in April was going to happen, I would have been shocked. So pretty good little week here for KU basketball.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I had kind of built it up so much thinking that he was going to go ahead and commit. Jalen Wilson is who I'm talking about. But given, you know, kind of the decisions that have gone against us recently in terms of, you know, RJ Hampton going overseas, you know, all these transfers that we thought were going to be coming, you know, just everyone that we've missed out on, I kind of was bracing myself for, you know, the fact that he was going to decide to go somewhere else. If you had asked me where he's going to commit, just all the indications seemed to be he was going to commit to KU. But I was, you know, pleasantly relieved, I should say, because while I kind of expected it, just given all the chatter out there, I've been burned so many times with this recruiting cycle, and it also became, I think, less of a necessity for him to commit after Isaiah Moss decided to come to Kansas. But it still is really nice to have him. Like you said, you know, Isaiah Moss is kind of that steady presence, the guy you know that can hit the three, can be that three-point threat, and is really kind of the one thing that the Jayhawks have been missing. Whereas Jalen Wilson is supposed to be a good three-point shooter, supposed to be a pretty good defender, you know, kind of supposed to fill that same sort of role. But getting him also kind of gives you the opportunity of, you know, Isaiah Moss you have for the immediate, kind of in a similar, I almost see this kind of in a similar situation to when Tariq Black came, you know, and kind of was that guy we expected to be down low center, you know, immediate good presence we can handle. And then you have a guy like Joel Embiid. Now, I'm not saying that I'm expecting Jalen Wilson to be, you know, as transcendent as Joel Embiid was, but kind of the same frame of mind where you saw a guy that could, you know, you expected could develop into a good player in Jalen Wilson, kind of doing the similar sort of things that we expect. Now, I'm not saying he's going to, you know, blow up the way that Embiid did, but just setting us up for that same kind of situation where we have a proven guy that can, you know, give us what we need. And then another guy that potentially could have a higher ceiling if he develops, but at the very least should be here the next few years to kind of fill that out for us. So, ultimately I think it's kind of the best case scenario. Like you said, we just had the one big weakness, that, you know, in terms of our 3-point shooting and being able to kind of space the floor that way, you know, and we've filled that now both from an immediate sense and also from a development sense.
Yeah, I think another great thing too is you look at Isaiah Moss's game logs on KenPom. You know, he's kind of got a little bit of LeGerald Vick syndrome, where he'll have a couple of insane games and then a couple of games where he disappears. And I don't think he'll necessarily continue that over to KU because I think he's going to be asked to do a lot less. He's probably just going to be mostly a catch and shoot guy and then, you know, asked to defend. It sounds like he's a pretty good defender. So asked to defend maybe the best wing on the other team that Marcus Garrett doesn't take, I guess. So offensively, you know, you're probably looking at him, you know, maybe being a little bit more consistent because he's just going to be a catch and shoot guy. But, you know, now with Wilson and, you know, who knows, maybe, you know, Tristan Ennerin, or maybe, you know, I've heard a lot of positive things about Christian Braun from that scrimmage and just from, you know, how he's played thus far. If Moss isn't shooting very well, you know, you've got options now to sub in for him, and you know, you can also do a lot of different things with lineups. I mean, I was going over it today. You could do a super big lineup where you're talking, you know, Wilson, Isaiah Moss, you know, Tristan Ennerina in the backcourt. I mean, that's like, you know, 6'10", 6'8", 6'5", and then, you know, do whatever you want in the front court. Or you can go super small and, you know, maybe Jalen Wilson is like your 6'9" center, or, you know, maybe Marcus Garrett can play, you know, some small ball center for you and stuff. So I think just the versatility that this gives the team and the fact that there isn't really going to be a lineup configuration that another team can throw at them that's really going to be able to take advantage of them on either end of the floor is going to be huge for this team this year.
Yeah, I think that's the craziest thing about it. It's like, this is kind of what we thought we were going to have last year in terms of a really deep team with a bunch of different guys that could do a whole bunch of lineups, but almost supercharged. I mean, you know, Doak, I mean, I don't think we have anyone quite as good and as polished as Dedrick Lawson was going to be, but Silvio and potentially Jalen Wilson, if he, you know, could kind of fill those same sorts of roles of being that second big man that can play on the outside, you know, but we've got, you know, now Doak and a better McCormick, someone who I think has developed a little bit, you know, so we have got two guys that could play center. But like you said, we've got a lot of different role players that will all play a bunch of different pieces, and we can pretty much throw any kind of lineup that Bill wants to out there, assuming, of course, you know, everybody plays relatively close to what we think that they can do. But I mean, yeah, just the versatility that they have to be able to kind of do whatever it is that they want to do. They have that even more so, I think, this year than they had last year. And last year, everybody was pretty much saying they were the consensus number one coming into the year. You know, again, I hate to jump on the bandwagon or, you know, jump on the hype train completely at this point, just given how many problems we had last year, and we know how horribly wrong it can go just from some bad luck with injuries and things like that. But, you know, I mean, it's hard to not get excited now that we have all of these pieces. You know, it's also kind of crazy to think about the fact that we still have one open scholarship at this point. I don't expect us to actually go ahead and use that at this point. Self is probably going to keep it available for the midseason transfer window, to see if he wants to pick a guy up or kind of give him some extra flexibility. I mean, I don't know who they could really get at this point unless there's just a random guy that they, you know, think everyone's missed on that hasn't really gone ahead and, you know, and committed anywhere yet. Or there's a guy that all of a sudden out of the blue decides to transfer that would be a really nice piece to have, you know, that might have to sit out next year. I think those are potentially possibilities, but I'm not expecting him to actually do anything, so. All right. Any other final thoughts about those two actually committing?
No, I guess just to reiterate kind of what you said, I don't think they're going to use the scholarship either. I guess I will say, you know, one thing is they're probably still a Devon Dotson injury away from the season being sunk. But one thing I will say this year versus last year is because of those shooters that they have now, I think if Udoka Azubuike goes down with another injury, obviously it would be bad, and obviously their team's ceiling and floor would both be lowered, but at the same time, I don't think it would be, you know, this monumentous event like it was last year where, you know, the season was pretty much over when he went down. This year, there's enough shooting around him where I think that there would be at least a path to, you know, win the Big 12 and make a run deep in the tournament, just because, I mean, you saw it with the 2018 team. I mean, that certainly wasn't the best KU team of the last 10 years or so, but they made the Final Four just because they could go on those spurts of guys just making three after three after three. So You know, we'll see. This team hasn't, you know, done it in college like that team had done, but certainly they have the potential to be that type of a shooting team for sure.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, really, the only place where we don't have a credible backup, because even if Doak goes down, McCormick should be able to step into his role at least in some capacity and get somewhat close in terms of as a unit. But if Devon Dotson goes down, I don't know that we have another ball handler that can really drive the offense moving forward. We would have to essentially, you know, either Garrett would have to be able to do enough offensively to be able to warrant staying on the field or staying on the court, you know, and not being that offensive black hole that we've had, or we'd have to have another guy that can step up and actually play point. So yeah, I mean, again, you know, injuries could definitely derail it, but I think that Dotson's going to be able to handle a bulk of the minute barring injury. So, all right. So we do have a couple quick, Twitter questions that have come in kind of related to this. And I do kind of want to talk about what this, you know, just some additional implications of what this might do, but real quick, I'm going to go ahead and throw it to a quick break. We'll be right back on the Rock Chalk Podcast.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And we're back. Okay, so I mentioned it before the break. Let's go ahead and jump right over to the Twitter questions. You actually put out a quick tweet asking people for questions, and we had a couple that came in, which I think actually kind of tie into talking about the implications for this. But the first one is from 528808, that's at Fogg's Fieldhouse. He says, how do we distribute minutes for Biggs, who is a three-headed monster, and Jalen Wilson, a perfect candidate for the small ball four? I'll let you go ahead and attack that one first.
Yeah, well, and I think, you know, Marcus Garrett is a pretty good candidate for a small ball four too. I mean, I think if he's not going to be like the primary Dotson backup, I would love to see him as like a four or even a five more so than a two or a three. So that's yet another, you know, guy in the mix. I think obviously Azubuike is going to play as much as he can handle. This is going to be kind of like last year when he was in with, you know, Dieter Klaassen, where he's got the ability to, you know, go hard because when he comes out, you know, Kansas has someone to take over for him, and he doesn't really need to stay on the floor in terms of fouls either. So if he gets into foul trouble, it's not the worst thing in the world either. So I think you'll probably see, you know, Azubuike play in the 25 to 30 minute range if he can handle it fouls wise. Silvio De Sousa, you know, we'll see. I think he'll be really useful. Both for, you know, when other teams are trying to throw multiple bigs at him, but also, you know, really good offensive rebounder. There's definitely going to be some teams that they play where they're going to want to take advantage of that. I mean, Iowa State is kind of the one that always comes to mind where they like to, you know, pound them with size. Yeah, I mean, Mitch Lightfoot last year came in and, you know, really changed the game when he came in and played. I mean, he was really energetic, and now it's like, you know, what do you do with McCormick and De Sousa and Azubuike? I mean, how much time is Mitch Lightfoot going to get? Because he obviously has to play. I think he kind of has to play center to take advantage of, you know, his quickness and stuff like that. So, you know, I don't know what they're going to do. I think Azubuike. Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think he's a better five than a four. I don't really. I think having him as a four doesn't really showcase, you know, his advantages. I mean, I think you need him to be a guy who can outquick the other team's five. But then again, I mean, you know, defensively, that's a problem too, because we saw him a couple of years ago, you know, get back down over and over and over again. So they're just in a tough spot.
Yeah,
I mean, but I think.
Yeah, I mean, offensively, you have to play him at the four. Just, I mean, given the ability, you know, he has shown the ability to kind of stretch out and kind of make plays a little bit away from the basket. I don't think you want him to be a five that's, you know, having to stay really close to the basket most of the time. So offensively, he's really going to showcase the, if he can get out on the perimeter and, you know, kind of get guys moving and kind of go in the flow of the offense, whereas a five in this offense, you're typically thinking is going to be hanging out in the middle for the most part, kind of moving back and forth from side to side on the block and trying to post guys
up.
And that's about Mitch's game.
Right. Well, they, you know, they do a lot of screen and roll with your five too. And so, you know, he can be a pick and pop big man perhaps, and, you know, you get Dotson going downhill to a vacated lane, you know, I think that's going to be a better look than, you know, have Mitch at the four, and then you've got, you know, you don't really have to go out and guard him, and then your five comes out, and then the lane is a little bit more clogged up. But yeah, I mean, I think he's, you know, too bad there's not like a 4.5 he could play. But yeah, I think it's going to be, I think it's going to be a little bit of a problem. Cause I don't love them playing two big men. I don't really know how any of them fit too well with Azubuike unless, you know, Jalen Wilson's playing a four or Inaruna is playing a four. Cause they're, you know, supposedly a little bit better shooters, but, for the most part, I think they're probably going to try and play small and trying to get those shooters on the floor and try to open things up for Dotson. Cause I do think that that's, you know, him just driving and kicking is probably going to be their best offense this year. So, I think, you know, you're looking at Azubuike playing, like I said, 25, 30 minutes a game. And then, you know, Silvio De Sousa is probably going to play the next most minutes. And then you're going to be looking at McCormick and Mitch Lightfoot kind of playing more, you know, cleanup roles like they did last year. So how about you?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm having a hard time seeing Azubuike getting more than about 20 to 25 minutes, just with the foul trouble that he's had, the fact that they are so deep, he tends to get into foul trouble quite a bit, especially when he's going as hard as he possibly can. And I don't think that Bill is necessarily going to kind of pull him back as much. Well, I should say he's probably going to do what drives everyone crazy and pull him immediately the second he gets two fouls in the first half, even if it's, you know, 5 minutes into the game and make him sit the rest of the half. I don't know that that's necessarily going to be such a horrible thing, though, this year, because they're going to have so many other guys that they can get in there to kind of go. And so, but like you said, I mean, I do agree that it might be more difficult in general to go ahead and play the two bigs. But the one thing that we haven't actually talked about yet that I just remember that we were planning or that I wanted to talk about is the fact that they moved the 3-point line back to the international, you know, distance should make it just a little bit easier because they will have more room inside. You know, I saw some debates on Twitter and online whether that actually made that much of a difference if people were going to, you know, go ahead and guard them out further. And this might have actually been on the site as well over on North Chalk Talk that we were talking about this too. And, you know, the fact the three-point line is further out means that people are going to be guarding three-point shooters further out regardless. And so that does open up a little bit more space and give them an opportunity to use two bigs. I do think, though, like, you wouldn't be able to do something like McCormick and Azubuike, just two, you know, prototypical, you know, big guy centers in the middle. But someone like Silvio, I think, would have more space to be able to coexist in there with Azubuike, unlike Diedrich last year. You know, I think part of the problem, though, like, if Azubuike had been here the entire year, I think that Diedrich and Azubuike kind of finally figured it out. Part of the problem, I think, was just that Diedrich was trying to play so far down and wasn't using the outside game that he had. Silvio projects like a big man that can do that sort of thing, can play more on the perimeter, not necessarily taking a bunch of threes, but at least being out there enough to help the offense flow and driving and slashing and all of that stuff. So I definitely think that there's room for that possibility. I do agree with you. I think that Azubuike probably gets the most minutes. If it's not him, then it's Silvio. They're probably going to both get about 20 to 25 minutes a game, the way that they're set up. Mitch and McCormick are probably going to spell those guys quite a bit. Mitch is probably going to get the least minutes of all the big guys. But what the question, I think, had forgotten about was Lightfoot. You know, I'm assuming when they say the three-headed monster, talking about Azubuike, Silvio, and then McCormick. Mitch Lightfoot is going to get minutes being a senior. You know, Bill has shown the tendency to rely on his seniors quite a bit, especially early in the year. So I'm expecting Lightfoot to have a fairly big role compared to what he's done recently. Now, it may not necessarily translate into minutes, but I'm guessing that in very important spots, you're going to find Mitch in there when we may not necessarily, you know, think about it. But yeah, really the question becomes Jalen Wilson. Do they play him almost exclusively at the three and then as a big, you know, as a small four, you know, when they're trying to kind of surround Azubuike with shooters, if people get in foul trouble? You know, I do think that Wilson probably is not going to play necessarily as many minutes up front, as we are kind of thinking with how big of a recruit he seems to be. I just think it's going to be hard for all the guys to get the amount of minutes that they want. And I do think now that we have the stable of big men that Bill Self is probably going to focus on getting the down low play, getting those big men going. That's what we've kind of been missing. Having the ability to have multiple guys you can rotate in and out that can hit the three, but only having this, you know, maybe three of them on the floor at a time or two or three of them, depending on what you think about Devon Dotson's ability to start hitting threes, you know, or if Garrett's even on the floor. You know, I do think that we're not going to necessarily focus so much on getting a ton of guards out there a lot. It's going to be about getting those big men minutes. All right. Any other final thoughts about that?
No. Well, I guess one quick thing I didn't.
The 3-point line. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, yeah, that's you. One thing I didn't, you know, didn't even really think about. I wonder if anyone redshirts. You know, there's a lot of bodies. I mean, Bill Self uses the redshirt a lot less than people, you know, kind of think he does or should. And I think part of that is probably because no one coming to a place like Kansas is ever thinking that they're going to redshirt. You know, everyone comes to Kansas thinking, I'm good enough to play at Kansas, so I'm going to play, you know. So I guess I wouldn't expect a redshirt, but I wonder if, you know, maybe there's one or two in the works. I mean, there's a lot of guys you know, five spots.
I guess my question is who would be the guy to redshirt? Like Mitch Lightfoot?
Well, that's, yeah, exactly.
To,
I mean, that's
already done that.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
You're not going to redshirt Azubuike or Silvio, obviously.
Right.
The only big guy I think that could be a candidate for it would be McCormick, but I don't know if, you know, like I think he's going to have a big enough role that he's probably not going to redshirt barring an injury early in the season, you know, that kind of knocks him out for a while. And then on the perimeter, like I can't think, obviously you're not going to have a redshirt from your graduate, you know, from Isaiah Moss. You're probably not going to have, you know, like Abaji, I wouldn't think would redshirt. He had already gone down that route once and, you know, really kind of took off. I'm having a hard time thinking of any of those perimeter guys that would redshirt as well. So,
yeah,
unless
my,
you're going
to say
like
thought,
a guy like Inaruna or someone else like that, potentially like one of the new guys, or Brown or, I'm blanking on the other guy's name.
McBride. But
the other, like, yeah, McBride. Like, if one of those freshmen were to go ahead and redshirt, then maybe I could see, like, McBride or Brown. But I don't think any of the other guys that we're looking at on here are really a good candidate for redshirting.
Yeah, my first thought was probably Christian Braun. My other thought was maybe David McCormick. I mean, I don't really see a path
like
for him.
On the same page there.
Yeah, but it's tough to, you know, he was a McDonald's All-American. Certainly, you know, improved over the course of the year. I think certainly proved that he was good enough to play at Kansas, especially with, you know, some more experience under his belt. So it's kind of tough to ask a guy who, you know, rebounded the way he did and I think, you know, really improved both as a screener and defensively towards the end of the year like he did to go redshirt. So, yeah, there probably won't be one other than, you know, maybe Braun or maybe an Inaruna. But it sounds like all four of these big men are going to be in the lineup.
Yeah, I mean – like I said, I mean, the other thing too is, you know, thinking about the fact that, you know, Ochai, he redshirted last year and then they pulled the redshirt when an injury kind of necessitated it. You know, but he got off to a quick start, but then kind of hit a wall. And I'm wondering, you know, I don't know how much of that was hitting like a normal freshman wall or how much of that was, you know, getting a nice burst of energy to begin, but the fact that he hadn't been playing for a while, you know, and was off for so long, like, I think we're already going to kind of run into Silvio's probably going to have a few growing pains, just kind of getting used to action again. I don't know if we want to put ourselves in another situation where a guy like McCormick, you know, isn't getting any kind of game action. And then if there is an injury and he needs to have the red shirt pulled to be able to play, trying to ramp it up at that point. So, you know, I'm just wondering how viable they think that kind of strategy would be. I also just don't know that there's anybody who would be willing to kind of pass up on the opportunity to play with this team, you know, to be able to preserve another year of eligibility. Like, I don't think Silvio is expected to really need another year of eligibility. So redshirting is probably not a big deal for him. And kind of most of the other guys are the same way. I think really incoming freshmen are probably the only ones that might even think about it. And we'll kind of see depending on how some of them are doing in practice, whether that seems likely. All right. So we're actually going a little bit longer than I thought we would. So real quick, we have one more question, but I'm going to go through it to one more quick break. We'll be right back on the Rock Chalk Podcast. And we're back. Okay, so final question I have for you is our last Twitter question from Namir Baker. He's asked, would you rather have Moss or Grimes, assuming you only get them for next season? I think I know what your answer is going to be, but I'll let you go ahead and answer first.
Yeah, well, I think it's pretty obvious that it's, for me anyway, it's pretty obvious that it's Isaiah Moss. I I was not as anti Quentin Grimes as, you know, I think a lot of people seem to be. But at the same time, you know, he shot like mid 30% from three. Whereas Isaiah Moss, you know, 42% last year on 114 attempts, 39% on over 300 attempts for his career. So, you know, really fits what Kansas needs. And I think, you know, more so than Grimes, kind of fits what KU likes out of its three men. You know, you look at the wings they've had over the years, and, you know, the best ones have been the guys who are more the catch and shoot types, and, you know, the guys who could defend on the other end. I mean, I think the best three really that we've probably had is Travis Rutherford. And, you know, he was a guy who didn't shoot a ton, but was a really good three-point shooter towards the end of his career. And then, of course, could, you know, lock down anyone on the other side of the floor. Obviously, you know, Andrew Wiggins was great too, but you have to be like a number one overall pick type talent, I think, in order to break that mold as a catch and shoot 3-and-D type guy that Kansas really likes to have on the wing. So Isaiah Moss for me, for sure.
Yeah, I have to agree with you. I mean, even though I think Grimes overall probably has, you know, more talent in terms of, you know, probably is a more athletic guy, has a much higher ceiling, I think, if you can get it put together. The problems that he had, kind of the issues that, you know, potentially there might have been in terms of the way that he was interacting with the staff and what he was being asked to do. There's a lot of unknowns there. I don't know that one more year would have been enough to turn it around the way that we, you know, the way that we need. And the fact is, Grimes, I don't think, is as good of a three-point shooter as Moss is. And that's kind of the one skill that this team was really missing. So if you're getting Grimes back, you know, I think the expectation is kind of he would be kind of more that combo guard that's supposed, you know, meant to kind of do everything if possible. But the one area that I think he lacks the most is his three-point shooting, and that's really the biggest need that they had. So yeah, I would definitely take Moss just because, I mean, that's kind of the big thing. You know, that's the only thing they were looking for. You know, like, I wouldn't have said no to Grimes coming back, but I do think there probably would have been questions about minutes and what would have been possible, you know, even more so than what we're seeing now. And they still would have needed to get a three-point shooter from somewhere. So, all right. Well, that's all that I had for tonight. Was there any other thoughts you wanted to leave us with? Any other, you know, kind of reactions or anything that you want to talk about?
No, I think we nailed it.
All right, one more thing. Did you have a random sports minute you wanted to leave us with, or are we going to save that for next time?
Well, we'll just do a quick update on the Cricket World Cup. We're about half-ish way through the group stage. Unfortunately, rain has washed out quite a few days, much like in baseball. You know, you can't play in the rain. Unlike in baseball, right, where, you know, if the World Series is rained out, they just push it back. In this, you know, you get 2 points for a win, 1 point for a tie. So if it gets rained out, both teams just get a point for a tie. So that's been a little bit disappointing.
Oh, wow.
But it's looking like kind of who we expected at the start, with England and India and Australia and New Zealand being the top four teams so far. But yeah, if you have those fancy internet streams, not that I or anyone I know would do that, but that's pretty much the only way to watch it. So, but it's been interesting when it hasn't been rained out.
Yeah, sounds good. All right. Well, thanks again for joining me tonight, Fetch. And thank you guys for listening to this. If you haven't already, please do find us at wherever you get your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, all of that great stuff. Just search for Rock Chalk Talk. You can subscribe there. You can give us a rating, preferably 5 stars if you could. But nice comments and all of that really does help to kind of get us out there to get more people listening to the podcast so we can bring you guys more great content. If you want to get in touch with us, you can email us. The email address is rockchalkpodcast@gmail.com. You can also talk to us on Twitter at rockchalkpod. Of course, you can always interact with Fetch over on Twitter as well with the Rock Chalk Talk site. That's at Rock Chalk Talk. But we are always all over the place out on Twitter, kind of interacting with fans and doing all that fun stuff. So, you know, definitely go ahead and shoot us a line if there was something you wanted us to talk about. If there's any kind of comments you wanted. And of course, if you send in your questions, then we could be answering them next time on the podcast. Programming note that we have coming up. I had mentioned previously, I did want to get Scott Chasen on here. The scheduling just didn't quite work out, but we will actually have him coming early in July. In terms of episodes that are coming up, we are going to be continuing every single Sunday our football series of previewing all of our conference opponents one by one. We have quite a few of those ready to go already. We'll be having at least one episode of the podcast every single week throughout the summer. We will not have a second episode next week, but the week after, we're going to be debuting one of our new, I'm not sure if it's going to be just a new periodic segment or you know, schedule that we'll have here, or if we're going to turn this into a new podcast show. But our newest writer over at Rock Chalk Talk, Dean Mullen, is a brand new Kansas fan, essentially. And so we have kind of set up a crash course of major games and topics to kind of talk about there. So that's something to look forward to that will be dropping 2 weeks from today when you guys are hearing this. So definitely catch that if you can. And then we'll be back to probably twice a week starting that second week in July. So definitely make sure you guys stay subscribed to the podcast feed so you can get those episodes as soon as they are available. But again, thank you guys so much for listening, and we will catch you next time on the Rock Chalk Podcast.